Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the Fairy Plantation House with paranormal director Cody Green. The Fairy Plantation House in Virginia Beach, Virginia, has a very rich history. In fact, the land itself was occupied by Native Americans going back to the 1500s. It's not known how long ago spirits first began to inhabit the Fairy Plantation House. There have been rumors of activity throughout the 20th century and now into the 21st. For many years, local residents said that even while the house was unoccupied, several lights in the house would turn themselves on. They still do, according to volunteers. The house is reportedly haunted by many different spirits, from the ghost of a slave named Henry to Eric, a young boy who died in the home, and many, many more. I'm Carol Hughes, in for Tony Bruschi, and today we'll talk about the history and the hauntings of the Fairy Plantation House with Cody Green, paranormal director of the Fairy Plantation House. Hey, Cody, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I have to ask, you must have an interesting history in the paranormal for you to get the position of paranormal director for this home.
Yeah, I actually started out as an investigator. I've always been into history. I've always loved history. And I've always been a big reader. And, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand. And I spent a lot of my life as a sensitive. I don't call myself a medium or anything like that, but I see, hear, feel, and smell every day of my life. I never really talked about it when I was young because I didn't want to get, you know, people think I was crazy or get locked up, put me on medication or whatever. So I just kept it to myself until years later when I was married and we're at home watching Ghost Hunters and shows like that. And I'm like, there's people like me. And I got more comfortable with it. We put together a team. We started doing some little investigations around the area, and then Fairy became a place we wanted to investigate. So we went there, and I fell in love with the place and asked them how I could help out.
The Fairy Plantation House is interesting, too. Well, there's a number of things, and we're going to get into the history. But it's run by volunteers. It's completely volunteer-led. And you are the vice president of the Friends of the Fairy Plantation House?
Yes.
So that is the organization that pretty much saved this house.
Yes. Belinda Nash and Jerry Richter and many others in the very beginning, they took their time and raised the money and worked with the city on getting things done and working with the National and Virginia Historical Registries and getting a ton of work done on their own, completely volunteer, a lot of stuff coming out of their own pockets. The house was run down completely. It had been abandoned for 9 years. And it kept getting broken into by local kids, you know, see how much they could smoke or drink before they saw a ghost. And it was really, you know, the haunted house in the neighborhood. And there was so much trash and it was terrible in there. And they spent years renovating. The work still hasn't stopped. It never stops. But it was a lot of hard work and sacrifice and money to make it happen.
Thank you for what you do, because so many of these homes so rich in history end up being torn down because no one steps up to save the home. And that history is just lost.
Yep.
So I really appreciate what you do. And it's so true. The renovations never stop on any home, it seems like, but especially a home that old.
Yeah. And I like to say the two most expensive words in the world are historically accurate.
I never thought about that, but that makes sense.
Oh, we seriously had it. I mean, I'm telling you, even a floor, we had like some termite damage at one point, and it was like an 8x8 foot section of floor in our library that cost like 10 grand.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Now, when the home sat empty for so long, had they done some renovations? Did you have to, you know, like say they redid the bathroom and now it looks like a 1970s bathroom. Did you have to go in and kind of tear some things out to get it back to more of its former glory?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that had to be done like that. It was depending on as well. It's really weird how the rules are to be on the registers and what's got to be historically accurate, what doesn't have to be. And especially a house like this that was lived in until 1987. So a lot of things were modernized in the house. I mean, of course, we could still have electricity and air conditioning and all that. Some things are grandfathered in. But to be on the registries, we got to have, it's almost like having a theme, at least by room, to make that room accurate to the year you're portraying and things like that. So there was some things we had to change, like in our first room, the court, what we call the courthouse, which is what it was. It was the Third Prince of Sand County Courthouse, and they added on the rest of the house to it in 1830. But that part was built in 1735. But when we took it over in 96, the original fireplace was gone, and it turned into a kitchen. So the original fireplace were gone, and the original stairs from the courthouse were gone. So the Friends of the Ferry Plantation House had those things rebuilt to the original blueprints.
You were able to find the original blueprints to this home.
Yes. For many of the things, yeah, like a courthouse, they would definitely have that in the city records or the county records.
Now, the land itself that this home is built on is very, very rich in history. And it goes back. So I'm going to let you kind of go back into the history of the land, because a lot of things have happened on this land, which could account for all the spirits that are in this house in part.
Yes, definitely. A lot has happened. So yeah, we go back to the Chesapean natives. Like you said, they're around in the 1500s. The Chesapeans were actually believed to have been the first natives to see the British come to shore in the Chesapeake Bay, you know, at Jamestown. And actually, Jamestown wasn't the first landing for the Europeans in America. It was actually in Virginia Beach, at, you know, where First Landing State Park is now. But the Chesapeans were there. They were on our land as well. And they got wiped out in 1601 by Powhatan's men. Not a living descendant of the Chesapeans. That's how badly they were wiped out.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Yep.
And there was a shipwreck there, I read.
Oh, there's
several?
There are a ton of shipwrecks, yes. There are a ton of shipwrecks in the Lynn Haven and the Chesapeake Bay. It's crazy. You got to think of all the movement that was coming out of this area, the Chesapeake Bay area, you know. This was a huge shipping ports here. We still have huge shipping ports here in southeastern Virginia. So this was a main big area for shipping and in and out. And then, of course, for piracy, Blackbeard was well known in this area. The governor of Virginia is the one who actually had him hunted down and killed in North Carolina. So, yeah, there's a lot of shipping going on here. So there's a lot of shipwrecks. And, you know, we don't really get hurricanes like a lot of the places on the East Coast because of the bay and the way we're shaped. It's really weird, but we don't get hit as hard as a lot of other places. So we got that to our advantage. But, you know, coming out of the bay, you know, all kinds of things could happen.
There was, and I thought it was a typo, but it's not, because I saw it in several different places. But is it called Walkie? Were they the family name? Were they the Walkies? Or
the
Walks. Okay. And then they built a house there as well. Was it also attached to the courthouse? Because the courthouse was first.
Yeah, the courthouse was there first. No, that one wasn't attached to the courthouse. Okay.
But it was on manor that house area.
Yeah, we call that the manor house.
Okay.
It was massive. It wasn't even a lived-in home. It was a country home. So if you were, you know, depending on how you were with the king, if you were wealthy, that depended really on where you lived. So if you were good with the king, you lived up in Williamsburg with the king's men. If you really weren't, you usually lived in Norfolk, in downtown Norfolk. The Walks were Scottish immigrants, so they weren't going to Williamsburg with the king's men. So they stayed in Norfolk. And so they built this manor house, this country home. 250 oil lands placed. It rivaled the governor's palace in Williamsburg. It was huge. And that burned down in 1828. Somebody locked the oil lamp over during a party and it burned the whole place down.
So you get invited to a party, and before you know, before the night's over, you've burned the entire place down. That's horrible.
It wasn't just burnt down. There was a vat of whale oil in the basement. So when the fire hit that, the whole place blew.
So there was nothing left.
Well, there was bricks.
And I read they took some of the bricks and they built this ferry plantation house with some of those bricks.
Yes, so at that time, George McIntosh had married into the Walk family. and he got, you know, that part of the property and the house as part of the dowry. So when the manor house exploded, they took what bricks they could find from that and added on to the courthouse for the center section of what is currently Ferry Plantation House. So, yeah, that was in 1830s when they finished that. And they built that for their son, Charles, who was away at West Point. So when he came home, he'd have a place to live.
So that's the house as we see it today. It's a federal style architecture.
Yes. Yes. Not that 1830 section is the center section of the house. And then Charles, 20 years later, added on a third wing, another end to the house. So, yeah, where the currently our parlor and conference room are.
So it's pretty big.
Unseemingly. You see it from the, it's like a TARDIS. You see it on the outside, you go inside, and you're like, this place is huge. But yeah, on the outside, it really doesn't look it, but until you go in and start walking around the place.
So over the years, there was, I'm going to guess, a lot of different families in and out of this home.
There's three main families that we talk about historically. And then, I mean, the other, I don't want to say they weren't historical people, but, you know, the later, more modern families that lived there were, you know, I wouldn't really put them in a historical sense. More of they just owned the property. But there's bigger story. You know, when you're trying to tell history stories, you want to tell the big stories. And
yeah,
that's really, you know, the first three families really are who we talk about.
George McIntosh built it for his son, Charles. After that home, was it always used mm-hmm. as a residential home after that point, or was it used for other purposes in its history?
Later on, like early to probably 40s, 1900s, it was used as a school and a few other things. It's been used for all kinds of purposes. It was a post office. There was all kinds of stuff going on there. I want to say it's been five families total that resided there.
So when you think about this whole history, then it sits vacant. And then the friends of the Ferry Plantation House get this home to start renovating. Where do you even begin to start working on that house? And how long did it take before you were able to open it as the museum that it's seen today?
Well, it was a lot of work. So really, Belinda fought the city about this because the city actually owns the house. We lease it from them.
Oh, okay.
So that was part of Belinda's deal. She's like, you know, part of their deal with her. She's like, look, I'm not going to expose the illegal things that have happened basically right now, but, you know, let us take it over. Let me and my friends educate in this place, turn it into a museum. And these, you know, the people around, you know, want to know our history, you know, and we run into that even more nowadays, but this was back in 96 is when Belinda did all this. She was a stubborn Canadian is what it was. She told you exactly what you were going to do in the nicest way possible. So, yep. But she, you know, she fought and fought and fought and ended up getting her way. And then they started work immediately. They had to take 10 truckloads of trash and waste and animal carcasses before they could start renovating.
Oh, so mm-hmm. you were at that state when you started renovations.
Yes. Yes. So much, of course, went into the research of how to renovate it and the proper ways to renovate it. So everything in the house has been donated to the Friends of the Ferry Plantation House, and it's all period stuff. We have so much stuff that we honestly turn stuff away quite often. There was the dining room table and chairs that we have now were in the original manor house at one point, and Mrs. Walk didn't like them, so she gave it to her son. So it wasn't the set that was in the house when it exploded, but it was originally in the house. And then it was passed down through generations. And then when they found out what we had done at Ferry, they brought that and donated it to us so we could have it in the house.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, there's another. We also have an antique gaming table that was kind of the same thing, but it was given to a nephew as a wedding present. But it was in the original manor house and, again, passed down through the generations and brought to us.
And as we were talking earlier before we started the episode, you know, so often homes like this are torn down. So now this home is standing in a neighborhood of million-dollar homes. It kind of stands out in the neighborhood. You said it's even a little bit hard to find.
That's the problem. It doesn't stand out.
Everybody sees those million-dollar homes. That's what they're looking at.
Yes. It's just a tiny little neighborhood, honestly. But you get into this part of the neighborhood, and you just see these huge homes and you're like, house, 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 house. Why is there a gravel parking lot? House, house, you know. Our parking lot is in between two lots. So it's just like right there on a corner, and you have to walk up a walkway to get to the house.
So when you think about this house and everything that's happened on that land and the surrounding land, including all those multi-million dollar houses, so often we hear stories about people saying, you know, the house was brand new, but it seemed, it's like it's haunted, but it couldn't be haunted because it's brand new. Well, what happened on that land before you built the house? It's so, it makes me think the surrounding houses might have some activity as well.
I hear sometimes that we hear things about that, but you know, I think Craig T. Nelson said it best. You left the bodies.
Exactly. Yep. And you know, so on this property, you have everything from the Native Americans we talked about being decimated, mm-hmm. which is horrific. Yes. Then of the shipwrecks that happened, you know, so mm-hmm. just on the land itself, tragedy and trauma has happened. Then in this particular house, there's all kinds of things that happened to residents over the years and people who live there.
Yes, it's so rich in both history and paranormal history. It's crazy. But and that's one of the reasons I think why I love it so much, especially giving history tours. I am an information junkie, so I like to give information as well. And they like to joke on me and call my tours the Gilligan's Island tour because, you know, it's a 3-hour tour. So,
see, I would personally love that.
Yeah, so, as some people do, and I get some people looking at their watches, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to speed it up now. But we're a tourist area, so a lot of people come to town on vacation and have a set plan on what they want to do and when they want to do it. So I kind of try to be mindful of that too.
So often with these types of homes, in order to understand the hauntings, you really need to look back at the history of the home and who's lived there, what happened before the house was even built. And Virginia itself is so rich in history.
Yes.
But I read there's 11 different spirits that haunt the home. What's your guess on that?
That's pretty accurate, but I mean, it's hard sometimes because most paranormal investigators will tell you, you know, that investigate the same place over and over again, ghosts will travel. So sometimes you get somebody there that you never encountered before. They were just passing through, but you know, so when you've done it, you know, over and over again, so many times, you kind of get to know who's there and who's there on a regular basis. But yeah, I would say 11, definitely.
Let's talk about these ghosts then. So I jotted down a few, and I really want to start with Henry.
Okay, awesome. Henry is great, honestly. And let me preface this before I talk about all the spirits. There's nothing negative in the house. We are super positive, which is one of the reasons why we don't get investigated by the big TV shows a lot. There's nothing negative there at all. It's super. I've stayed the night there. I don't know how many times and never felt unsafe. We'll go to Henry. Henry was born on the property as a slave. From what we understand, apparently he helped. He rescued people from the burning manor house and ended up hurting his leg in the process. And that's where he got his limp. He ended up about 6'8".
He was massive, a tall dude. Guy. Yeah.
Picture Bubba Smith from Police Academy. That's Henry, really. He lived and worked on the property his entire life. When the Civil War ended, Isabel McIntosh was who was living at the house. She basically told the slaves, you know, I'll pay you if you want to stay, but if you want to go find your own way, I'm happy for you. Go find your own way. Henry was in his 70s at this point and really had no place else to go. So they actually gave him a room in the house, which was the indoor slave quarters. And they moved him in there and made that his room. He was able to come and go as he pleased. He loved to go fishing. He did pass away in his 80s in the house. Now he's very much the protector of the house. It's called paranormal for a reason. We still don't know why they react certain ways to things, but it's like if somebody comes to the house on a tour or especially like a paranormal tour and they're there to not be such a good person, quite often I'll see Henry standing behind that person during the tour.
Do you actually see him or is it more of a sensing him?
No, I definitely see him.
So what kind
of blessing and a curse?
I was going to say, what kind of interactions do you have with him? And I was going to ask that. Is it frightening or is it more of a...
I don't think it's ever been frightening to me because I grew up with it. My earliest memory of being able to, you know, interact with the paranormal was when I was 5.
So your whole life has been like this.
Yeah, it's never been a scary thing to me. I mean, I've had them try to scare me, but I mean, at this point, it's like, yeah, great. Thanks, buddy. Henry doesn't try to scare anybody, honestly.
Do you think that since he's the protector of the house, so if someone comes in, let's just use an 18-year-old guy, for example, who's with his parents and really doesn't want to be there. It's like, oh, I'm bored. Or disrespectful to the house in any way. Do you feel that that kind of angers Henry a little bit if they're disrespecting the house?
Yes, because we actually found in the door jamb of the door that goes to the stairs up to his room, there is an H that was carved into the door jamb. I think he was so proud of that space and so proud to be living in a home. You know, the fact that this family felt that much about him to give him a room in the home. And so I feel like he's got that strong attachment to it and wants to protect it.
I love that in his lifetime, he was, you know, I hate what happened to him and being a slave. And I can't even wrap my brain around that. But for him to have had a place of his own to come and go as he pleased, you know, at the end of his life, at least he had that freedom, literally.
Yes.
Which I think is really nice. So I can see how he would be very attached to the home, and the homeowners might be long gone. Now the home is actually his.
I wouldn't say they're long gone, but
too.
Oh, yes.
So who owned, let's talk about them then next. Who owned the home at that time?
Okay, well, Ferry, as it is now, was owned originally by Charles McIntosh, whose parents had built it. And he married Isabel, and they had 6 kids. 2 didn't make it past a year. 1 died the day after her 5th birthday, yellow fever. And then they had 2 that grew up. But Charles was actually a Confederate officer in the Navy. But even though he was very much a North sympathizer, but he was drafted in the Confederacy. He actually died on the CSS Louisiana. He didn't die on the ship. He got hit by a shell from a Union ship. And then he had to have arm and leg amputated, and he died 13 days later in New Orleans.
So I read that someone was in the house mourning their husband or somebody. Would that be his spouse?
Yes, that would be Isabel. So we actually have a picture of that in the house. It's really crazy to me because I've seen an intelligent spirit of Isabel. We've interacted with Isabel a bunch over the years. So in the picture that somebody got years ago, in a window is a apparition, and it's definitely Isabel, but she's pregnant in the picture. It's her reflection in the window. And when Charles died, she was pregnant with their 6th child. So highly emotional point in time. So right there, that would be a residual haunt, her sitting at that window. But I've also interacted with the intelligent version of Isabel as a spirit, and she's not pregnant and she's kind of flirty.
Well,
yep.
Have you actually seen her as well?
Seen her?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen Isabel, yes.
Okay. Is it pretty easy for you? I'm assuming, you know, because Henry would look quite different from Isabel. Do you sometimes see somebody, you're like, who are you? Where did you come from?
Yeah, that does happen every once in a while.
Just stopping by for the tour?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's you know, you never know. I mean, the house was a hub in the area, because we were the main ferry stop because we had the only windmills in the area. So this is where the farmers would go to grind all their things in the windmills. So, and we had, like I said, we had a post office there. We had a tavern on the property. We had all kinds of stuff there. So it became kind of a hub. So a lot of people came and went from there anyway.
And there's just, I would think in the area, there's got to be so many spirits.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you travel from place to place in the afterlife, but it doesn't seem like it would be hard.
No,
if you wanted to. Now, I read about a boy in the home, and I think there's more than one child in the home, spirit.
Yes.
Child in the home, right?
Yep.
There's a little boy, Eric.
Eric fell out of a second story window when he was 8 and I believe broke his neck. But he likes to run around the house. He's very much a 8-year-old boy. He likes to run around and do things that he's not supposed to do. And he runs around the crabapple trees out front. And yeah. He's all over the place. He's very much an 8-year-old energetic boy.
And have you had, or someone you know has connected with him?
He doesn't really, he doesn't really communicate much. He just likes to run around and laugh and play.
When you're like giving a tour to a group, or even the ghost tours, because you do those, have people picked up on him?
Yes. People have picked up on Eric. I mean, like, they'll feel like he'll run by him and stuff like that. Yeah. Or, you know, he likes to, sometimes he'll find somebody he likes and wants to hang out like right next to him. But yeah, nothing really communication wise with him, honestly.
I also read one of the other spirits. I've got several here, so I might say one that's not correct. So just please correct me. Yep. Sally Rebecca Walk. It was Walk, correct? Because it's spelled W-A-L-K-E. So I want to say Walker or Walkie. Is she in the home? Because I read that she mourns her fiance, who obviously maybe died in the home, or?
No.
Oh, okay. What happened to him?
So when Charles became a Confederate officer, they were worried about, they had family up in Ohio, and they were worried about retaliation up north on their family because they had a Confederate officer in the family. So they brought the women and children down here to keep them safe, and they kept them at the house at Ferry Plantation. And Sally was one of those women who was engaged to a Union officer who was killed in the Civil War in 1863. And she planted the magnolia tree in our backyard in his honor. She's very much Our Lady in White. Still, you know, the lady in mourning still. There's been one really good picture of her that we keep framed in the house. And, she's seen, you know, walking around, you know, in a white dress.
And the tree is still there and still healthy?
The tree is still there, yes. It is currently in the top 5 for size of southern magnolias in the country.
Now, that's a beautiful legacy to leave in his honor.
Yes.
It's still there.
Yep. It's an awesome tree.
So I can see why she would be attached to that home. But then, when you think about trauma and the Civil War history, the way they're torn apart and people are dying and all of the things that happened.
It was brother against brother.
When you're thinking about Henry the Slave and all of this treatment of people, and, you know, it sounds like maybe Henry might have been treated well. I don't know, for his entire life, at least thank God at the end of his life he was. But when you think about that and you put all that together, there's just a lot of energy, I would think, in a home like this.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, it's up and down. Sometimes they feel like, you know, coming out and playing. And sometimes I can usually tell as soon as I walk in, like, how the day is going to go.
Really? You can sense that right away?
Yeah. It's like, oh, they seem a little on edge today, or, you know, I feel the energy, you know, whatever the energy is, you know, I can feel the emotion in the air kind of thing.
When you think about it, it wouldn't, you know, they would be kind of like we are. There's good days, there's bad days, there's days you want to talk, there's days you don't want to talk.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to tell people this, especially people who are new to paranormal investigating, because I find a lot of the problem that we have with, especially with new investigators, is everything they know about investigating is from television. You know, they're watching an 8-hour investigation being smushed down into an hour.
So people come in thinking, oh, well, this is a haunted house. So something's going to touch me right away. Something, I'm going to hear voices. I expect it.
Yeah. That, and I mean, just the way you treat them. I mean, they were people too. Treat them as such. You're in their house. You see a lot of like provoking and stuff. I don't like that. You know, I really don't like provoking and investigating. Because I want to talk to them like a person. If you talk to them like a person, they're more apt to respond to you, just like a normal person would.
And that wraps up part 1 of our conversation about the Ferry Plantation House with paranormal director Cody Green. In our next episode, we'll talk about more spirits who still haunt the home. For more information about the house, as well as getting tickets for a tour or the ghost tour, go to their website at fairyplantation.org. That's F-E-R-R-Y, plantation.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, all ad free. And for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.